Good evening. You're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia. It's Wednesday, the 2nd of September, 2009. And for the next hour and a half, I'll be your host. My name's Hereward Fenton. And on this show, we investigate a whole lot of different things that are kind of ignored in the nightly news and sadly on the radio and in the newspapers too. But we try to go there where they refuse to go. And we try to do it with a degree of objectivity. Of course, we don't aim for total objectivity. That would be ridiculous. I mean, everyone approaches every subject with some sort of bias. One of the problems that we've found with the mainstream media is the claim of total objectivity is one of the ways in which they hide their inherent biases. So this this claim of objectivity that you often get from all forms of news has to be looked at from a very sceptical perspective. So, you know, we try to be objective. That's what I would say on this show, is we try. And but, you know, we have, I guess, some prejudices. And those prejudices are created by our experiences with a number of events in history which we have investigated and which we continue to investigate, which lead us to make assumptions. And, you know, we make no apologies for the fact that we do make assumptions. But, well, we have to. I mean, we are very limited in what we can get in terms of hardcore, you know, solid information. We go on published news stories. We try to find the contradictions. We try to look at strategy. We look at geopolitical strategy. And we try to infer what is going on. It's very tricky. You know, as time goes by, hopefully we'll get more direct sources and more people will come to us with groundbreaking stories direct from, you know, an unimpeachable source. But till then, we'll just continue as we have been, bringing you the stories as they come to hand and attempting to give them as good a treatment as we can and with as much perspective as we can. Well, look, coming up in about 15 minutes, we've got an interview that we'll be doing tonight on a really important subject, and one we haven't covered before on Truth News Radio. And that's the subject of food freedom and the danger posed by international regulatory agreements such as Codex Alimentarius. And I'll explain that in more detail as we get into that topic. We've just got a few other stories to cover before we get into the main interview for tonight. The first one I just want to note is that ABC Four Corners aired a remarkable piece of propaganda from the BBC titled Conspiracy 7-7, The London Bombings. This is actually the third installment in the BBC's series on, as they call it, conspiracy theories. I haven't actually watched the show. I did watch the previous two. Wasn't very impressed. This one seems very similar, and people I've spoken to from, you know, a variety of different walks of life seem to basically agree on one thing, that it's rubbish. Unfortunately, though, it's been it's a program that will be viewed by millions of people in Australia. And that, you know, the program is actually about supposedly an investigation of conspiracy theories around the London 7/7 bombings, which occurred on the 7th of July 2005. I'll just read you like a brief introduction from the promotional page there for ABC Four Corners. The BBC's Conspiracy Files investigates a range of remarkable claims that have been made after the bomb attacks on London's transport system 4 years ago. Why did the government claim the bombers had travelled to London on a train that didn't run on that day? Did Israeli forces know of the attacks in advance and then warn their officials visiting London not to go near the targeted locations? These are just some of the remarkable claims being made. Now, I've done, you know, some research into some of the claims being made, and well, you know, there are some claims that simply haven't been explained, and they're not so much claims as they are problems with the official account, which seems to indicate that the police were not telling the truth. Now, from what I've heard about this particular documentary, is that they've introduced a number of straw man arguments, which they you know, happily smash down, and they've brought in kind of nutty extremists like Holocaust deniers. You know, they've brought in people who they can then say, well, you know, this is the type of person who believes in these theories. So, look, we'll post some links to that on the show notes, and you know, you can have a listen and make up your own mind. I may get around to actually talking about this in more depth at some point. Now, just want to continue with some of our discussion that we were basically covering last week, which was the plans for mass vaccinations. It appears that the latest sort of twist in this is that even though the World Health Organization is now claiming that swine flu is spreading at an amazing rate, it seems that the massive kind of rejection of the vaccine by so many different groups is actually having an effect on government and policy makers. And there was actually a statement made by Obama, the president of the United States, I think within the last couple of days, to the effect that swine flu vaccines will be voluntary, which is just an interesting point there. And the development that came up late last week, which is throwing a spanner into the works here, is that insurers have declared that they may not cover doctors who administer the jab. And this is obviously because the insurers know that there could be a variety of claims against anyone made by, you know, victims against anyone who injects them. And they obviously don't feel that the vaccine is safe enough. But despite that, the government actually said that that they think that's ridiculous and the government wants to go ahead anyway. One suspects that the government is perhaps not really speaking with the best interests of the general public, and possibly under some sort of pressure due to contracts that you know, have been signed. So look, that's another story that I'll be posting a link to on the main page of our site. So look, we've had some interesting feedback from the chemtrails installment that we did last week. I'll mention some of that next week, and I just want to say to my listeners, look, we don't claim to be the ultimate authority on anything, and you know, we may do another show on the chemtrails topic. It's certainly one that is confusing, so you know, we may get some more people in to give a different angle on that. So okay, well, I think it's time for a little promotional break. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Okay, well, we're into the meat and potatoes of the show tonight now, and our main topic for tonight is a really tricky one, and one that I know a lot of our listeners are going to be interested in, because I've had people asking me about this before. It's the subject of food regulations, and in particular, a food code known as Codex Alimentarius. Now, that is actually a Latin for food code, and I'm just going to read from the Wikipedia definition before introducing our guest for tonight. Okay, Codex Alimentarius is defined by Wikipedia as a collection of internationally recognized standards, codes of practice, guidelines, and other recommendations relating to foods, food production, and food safety. Its name derives from the Codex Alimentarius Austriacus. Its texts are developed and maintained by the Codex Alimentarius Commission, a body that was established in 1963 by the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations and the World Health Organization. The Commission's main aims are stated as being to protect the health of consumers and to ensure fair practices in the international food trade. The Codex Alimentarius is recognized by the World Trade Organization as an international reference point for the resolution of disputes concerning food safety and consumer protection. Now, that sounds just superb. I mean, I could hardly have any criticism of that reading it at face value. However, many people have been posting articles, some short documentaries have been made, indicating that what this organization really is and what it could end up doing is actually controlling and restricting our freedom to buy and eat what it is we choose in quite an alarming manner. And tonight I'm welcoming to the show a man who's done a considerable amount of research on that topic. His name is Michael Bending, and he is the webmaster and creator of an organization by the name of Health Alliance for Health Freedom Australia. And Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Fenton.
Yes. Oh, Herowood's my first name. Sorry. That's all right.
you're right. Thank you, Herowood.
You're right. You're right. Look,
I'm sure I said Herowood.
Yeah, look, I don't mind being called by my surname either. You know, it's fine. As long as people just don't call me by rude names, I'm happy.
All right, I promise.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show. I've been looking at your website. It looks really interesting. You've got a background in natural health, and you've done a lot of work building an organization here, which appears to be, you know, really balanced. And, you know, you seem to have a grip on a lot of issues, which I think some of the, alternative or green movement seem to be unable to grasp, is that we have a lot of issues with basic freedom and protecting the integrity of our society. I'm really, really interested in your research that you've done into this organization, Codex Alimentarius, because I mean, I've watched a couple of docos that are on the internet, and I was pretty horrified by what I saw, you know. But I've been to Wikipedia and I read this totally harmless description of an organization dedicated to standards and protecting people. You're doing a lot more than just this. You've got a petition up in relation to mandatory vaccinations, which we'll be getting into. And you've also got a background in other issues which are very relevant to our show. You've told me that you've studied demolition under in the Navy, and you know a lot about demolition techniques, which you know, a major feature of our shows has been investigations of the alleged, you know, 9/11 building collapses. So, you know, we've got a lot of interesting topics there to cover, but why don't we just kick off with Codex and just see where we go from there?
Yeah, sure. Well, look, Howard, I actually agree with you. Like, at face value, Codex seems to be fairly fairly simple and straightforward. You know, no one could argue with, you know, better regulation or regulation that keeps us safe. But that's probably where it ends. In actual fact, it's anything but. Or in actual fact, it's actually so much over-regulation or regulation, depending on which lobby group has taken control of Codex. And that's probably more the point. What's actually happened over the years is the big corporations. It's become an instrument for the big corporations to take over the world.
Okay.
And they're using the regulatory framework to so it works in their favor.
And is it actually? It's a form of a trade agreement, isn't it? I mean, that's basically what it would be practically. Like, the government signs into this trade agreement, which then puts conditions which could end up resulting in laws that are binding on it, on its citizens.
Originally, Herwood, it started off with just fairly basically Europe. It was just a set of regulations way back in 1963. It was just loose regulations dealing with countries in Europe. So even at this point in time, you'll still hear many people, and certainly the authorities in Australia, will say, you know, what's happening with Codex has got nothing to do with us. It's a European-based initiative. And I can't help wondering where they've been for the last 20 years when they, if they haven't seen the changes that are happening broadly and globally and how these changes are affecting us.
Yes.
I wonder where they were when the free trade agreement was signed with Australia and America. They must have been sleeping.
Yeah.
Or they certainly didn't read what it entailed and just how much Australia lost in regards to trade.
Right.
But so, you know, the world is shrinking. And so to for them to, you know, the argument to say that it's, look, it's an international thing, it's happening in Europe and it won't affect us is actually, you know, is lame. It's not true. So as time goes on, though, at this point in time, however, it's not affecting us. We can't really. And in Australia, we'll probably be the last ones to actually feel its impact. The countries that will feel its impact firstly, certainly Europe and some of the member states of certainly UK and America.
Some of the claims that have been made that I've read are that, for example, if when it comes into full force, you may not be allowed to buy vitamins over the counter. Is that likely, in your opinion?
No. Okay. No, there's been a lot of exaggerations. And I must say, I can understand because it's a very hard subject to articulate.
Right.
And so I think that's probably just a throwaway line to make people stand up and think about this. But no, there'll always be you'll always be able to buy the vitamins. The problem is that when this over-regulation starts to seep in and creep in, it'll probably make the cost of vitamins very high, and a lot of the regulation that's being made is reducing the dosages. So what's going to happen is it's a two-pronged process where the costs go up. The regulatory costs are just passed to the consumer. So your vitamin C that you buy today for, you know, $25 may cost you $50 in the future, and you're
really
only getting half of that.
Is it like an extra tax, or I mean, where's that extra money going to?
Well, of course it is. Well, the extra money goes to the bodies that regulate. For instance, in Australia, TGA have fees that they charge. So those fees are passed on to the wholesaler and the manufacturer, who then passes on to the retailer and the customer. So everything eventually is passed on to the customer, whether you like it or not. So the same thing is going to happen or can happen in future. But the vitamins won't be removed off the shelf per se. Not that it's not going to be that simple. If it was that simple, people would certainly rise up and storm the government.
Well, one would hope so. I mean, according to some of these,
it'll be a lot more subtle, Herbert, right, and that's what's actually happening.
Okay, I mean, according to some of the things I saw, which maybe were a bit alarmist, herbs could be regarded as a medicine, you know.
Mm.
And then, well, if herbs are a medicine, then you won't just be able to buy herbs, you know, you'll have to go through, you know.
Yeah.
That sounds perhaps maybe a little bit exaggerated, but
well, no, not it depends where you are.
Right.
If you're in the States or the UK, then yes, that's not so exaggerated. But if you're in Australia, we've got a different system. Now this is I'll try and make it simple. The UK and the US regulate their health supplements, or have regulated them, under legislation that's akin to foods. In Australia, we used to do that before. I think it was the 80s, the early 80s or mid 80s, it was changed to where our health supplements now are regulated as a therapeutic good or a quasi medicine, and so they're not regulated as foods. Technically, Codex are actually moving towards, they're adopting the Australian standards to some degree, and probably making them a little bit more recalcitrant. But the TGA delegates have been heavily instrumental in a lot of the Codex committees over there and ratifying this regulation. So it's, you know, where, you know, it's not going to affect us directly or immediately. It's going to affect the UK and the US, but the Australian TGA have had a fairly big hand. They're playing a fairly big hand behind in these committees.
What does TGA stand for?
Therapeutics Goods Administration.
Therapeutic Goods Administration, yeah. Okay, so we're talking about regulation. We're talking about
finish with this. So in the US and the UK, yes, they will see a lot of these things disappear from their shelves, because firstly, the regulation says they can't make certain claims that they used to.
Okay,
they have to submit dossiers, which are costing them quite a lot of money, or certainly will in the future, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to submit a dossier. So if you can't submit a dossier, then, you know, it just won't come to market. You won't see the product in the marketplace unless some of the bigger corporations have got the money to submit a dossier. So you're starting to see how it's biased towards the big corporations once again. And interestingly enough, not a lot of people know this, but a lot of vitamin companies in Australia and overseas are actually owned by the big drug companies. They started infiltrating and buying out vitamin companies, you know, in the 80s.
Right.
And now largely they benefit. They own a large slice of them. These companies, so they benefit once again. They're the guys at the end of the day who can submit the dossiers, who can bring the new vitamins to market, and so they benefit from this regulation or this overregulation.
So it's really overregulation and then a bureaucratic framework there, which is going to just cost us money, and you know, also possibly restrict what we can buy, but the extent to which that's going to occur is different in each country.
Correct. And a lot of people might say, oh, look, well, if the drug companies own the vitamin companies, surely they want to make money. Well, they're still going to make money, and they're actually going to make more because they're reducing the dosages and raising the prices.
Reducing the dosage. See, that's confusing to me, because I always thought with vitamins, well, you just get as much as you want. You know, it's like you dose yourself. You don't sort of, I mean, obviously, if they've diluted what's in the pill, I mean, you know, it's a bit ridiculous, because, I mean, you should be able to decide how much of it you want.
Yes.
I mean, with vitamin C, some people take massive amounts of it. Mm. Some people just take smaller. I occasionally take some vitamin C. I don't go in for massive amounts of anything, actually. I'm not a big proponent of any kind of pill popping, actually.
Yeah.
You know, And I actually would prefer to get my vitamins naturally anyway.
Mm.
But, but if people want to take vitamins, let them, you know, goodness me. I mean, you know, we have so many toxins and so many drugs that people are taking so freely. You know, if anyone who works in an office, you know, you'll be surrounded by people who are popping pills all the time. Every time they get a headache or a sore throat, they're taking the latest thing from the pharmacy.
Yeah. Well, that's probably a little bit different. I refrain from taking drugs, but a lot of what's happening here, Herwood, is probably the direct result of a lot of research that's come out over the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Certainly showing high doses of different vitamins and minerals can in fact I'm hesitant to use the cure word, but
yeah.
can in fact be highly effective in eradicating heart disease.
That's interesting.
They found that very high doses of vitamin C, lysine, proline, green tea extracts, and arginine, and maritime pine bark can in fact roll back atherosclerosis of the arteries within about 6 months to a year, and the drug companies have found out about this. In fact, Merck found out about this, and they banded together with a whole lot of other drug companies in the US, and they got done for price fixing on vitamin C about 5 years ago.
Really? So were they actually marketing vitamin C?
Well, believe it. Look, a lot of people don't know how this industry works. Once again, the drug companies are the ones that actually generally synthesize the vitamins.
Right.
It's not someone like you and I who run a company or a lab and create our own vitamin C. A lot of this stuff is produced by the big drug companies, and they on-sell it to wholesalers. So, you know, they've got their fingers, their tentacles in at every level. So they stand to gain, you know, they actually stood to gain. But they started price fixing at a time when this research first came out. So after they were prosecuted in the US courts for price fixing, they prosecuted millions of dollars. After they prosecuted, they devoted all their energies to the Codex Alimentarius and steering that into having a higher lower safe dosages, so
okay.
reducing the limits that are available, the dosages that are available. So they're active, you know, while we're sitting here asleep.
Right.
They're planning every single step of the way.
They're constantly thinking about maximizing their profits.
I don't think they sleep.
right. It is amazing. So vitamin C was finding its way into a commercial sort of pharmaceutical product, which was then a treatment for it. Yeah.
Not into a pharmaceutical product at all. They just started raising the prices because they synthesize the vitamin C.
Oh, they just sold the price. I see what you mean.
And they just upped the prices. Yeah. So everyone around the world who was buying vitamin C through their labs had to buy it at a higher cost.
I see. That's
so that's filtered down to all your health food stores and your health food manufacturers.
Right. Yeah.
I was also going to say there's a lot of new research coming out now showing that schizophrenia can be treated with high dose of vitamins and minerals and proteins. Certainly, they found that. There seems to be the adrenal gland seems to be implicated, and vitamin C modulates the adrenal gland, helps modulate the adrenal gland. There are metabolites that are produced by the adrenal gland that some people genetically aren't predisposed to break down, and these cause all sorts of the schizophrenic symptoms.
Interesting.
So, there's been a lot of work with high dose of vitamin C once again. So
yes.
Getting back to people who would say they get everything from their diet, well, yes, a diet is very good, but we're seeing that this isn't entirely true.
Yeah, I'm sure that you know, when you get into a situation where your health is impaired, these types of things become, you know, very, you know, valuable. I mean, I was sort of looking there at the alternatives people have between, say, taking vitamins as against like Codral, because what most people do is they take Codral, that just seems to me far worse. I mean, you know, I mean, even if the vitamins aren't helping, it's still better to take the vitamins than the Codral, because at least the vitamins aren't hurting you.
Yes.
Just a question for you. A lot of people are talking about olive leaf extract these days. What do you know about that?
Look, it's great stuff. It's antiviral. So certainly if you've it's been found to have some success with things like candida, but it's certainly something that you probably, if you have a flu or you're in the flu season, you should have close at hand. Or if not, take a couple of grams of it a day just to keep any bugs at bay, any viruses. So yeah, no, look, it's highly antiviral. So it's great stuff.
Excellent. Okay, look, just going to take a really short break here, and we're just going to get back into your organization and what you're doing. So just stand by there.
Sure.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Okay, well, welcome back to Truth News Radio, and welcome back, Mike Bending, to the show. I hope you like our radio show here. I'm just gradually getting better at doing this. Started off pretty rough, but we've been going for about over a year now, we've had, you know, we've done some interesting interviews, and we're trying to get into more and more subjects that are, you know, I guess, sort of almost taboo, you know, like we cover so many subjects that are ignored. It's amazing how many subjects are ignored. And, you know, questions around health. Well, you'd think, you know, there's been such a long history of alternative health in this country. Why would that be ignored in the media? Yet it is. It's like there's, it seems that what I've noticed over the last 10 years or so is a kind of a contraction of awareness and a shifting back to a very rigid kind of mentality. I don't know if you've noticed that, but it just seems that we've, you know, there was a time in the, say, early 90s when things were very much more open and opinions were there was a more a liberal atmosphere. There was more an atmosphere of respecting freedom, personal freedoms. Since then, you know, especially accelerating since September 11, 2001, we've just seen this shutting down of dissent, shutting down of alternative forms of thinking, shutting down of alternative forms of therapy. I mean, I've noticed health food shops disappearing everywhere in Sydney. There used to be health food stores in every suburb. Now, there's none. I mean, I live in Glebe. Glebe used to have one of the biggest health food stores probably in the country.
It was bought out by an American chain.
Well, I'm very interested to know what happened to that, because Russell's it was called.
Russell's, and, correct,
and,
yeah.
I can't comprehend how that could have been bought out and then shut down, and the building itself is still empty. It's been empty for like a year in a prime piece of real estate, like opposite the Glebe Markets. Have you got any idea what happened there?
Yeah, no, the whole of the Russell infrastructure was bought out by I'm just trying to think of the American company, and they're still operating in Australia. They've obviously decided that the Glebe store was not turning over enough for them. It's obviously a strategic decision they've made, but I would have thought a store like that in Glebe would have been.
It had a massive following. It had generations of people who'd been going there.
Probably what they've done, Hereford, anyway, is what they're really into anyway. All they did was, Russell's was all around Australia, so really they had the distribution points. So they weren't, they weren't interested in actually keeping the product range. They were more interested in buying the brand loyalty to Russell. So they bought up all the stores in Australia and then slowly changed it over to their GNC.
That's the company. Yeah.
They slowly changed it over to their own brand of vitamins and minerals and health supplements. So,
that's interesting.
Just a business strategy.
I observed what happened here, and I saw that GNC take over, and initially they were exactly the same products. Then they suddenly shut down. But before they shut down, they'd opened another branch in the shopping centre, which is quite nearby. Mm. And then in the new branch that they opened, now virtually all they're selling is bodybuilding stuff.
Yeah, they've got nothing. It's just all their own brand name.
It's just packaged,
Yeah. Whereas Russell's was great. You could buy just all this organic stuff all your organic food and a whole lot of other things. Yeah. Look, they destroyed Russell's, and it's sad because, see, this is our battle we have here in Australia too. It's not just, the people in Russell's were obviously great people. They had ethics and they love what they did. But they may have needed a holiday, or then that may have needed the money. And this is what happens. We sell out. We don't have any really long term vision. The people in the health industry don't have any great long term visions. They don't. They're probably ignorant of what's happening globally, maybe the people from Russell have had regrets. After they've seen what the GNC have done to their outlets.
Well, look, it wouldn't be so bad if there was a thriving competition. If there were half a dozen other places in Sydney, but there aren't really any.
No,
I mean,
I know.
I don't seem to see any. I know that there's a food co-op up in Enmore, which has been there, and that's not going away. That's been there for a long time, and I'm hoping to actually get them on this show at some point to talk about that.
All we've got now is Go Vita, really, they're not like Russell. So yeah, no, we're seeing things like this creep in, certainly since the free trade agreement, we're seeing a lot more of Australian companies being bought up by American companies. This is the trend that we've seen the last 20 years, I guess, slowly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're right. Once upon a time we did seem a little bit free. We're certainly more isolated, and that's probably what we're starting to experience now. We're experiencing that we're feeling the effects of the global village a lot more.
Right, but the global village, I mean, that's a nice way of describing it, isn't it? It sounds harmless when you put it that way.
It's another form of marketing, isn't it? It's like Codex Element.
The global village, the international community. Yes. Yeah. I mean, whenever they talk about the international community on the news, they're talking about like military strikes and, invading countries.
A conference for peace, that they're planning a military strike somewhere. It's actually it's getting to that point where it's so transparent.
It certainly is. It's become quite outrageous. Look, can you just tell us a bit more about Alliance for Health Freedom Australia and what it is doing? Yeah.
Well, Herbert, let me actually just join the dots too, because I know a lot of your listeners are certainly very interested. You guys kicked the ball off with the GM movie, Monsanto. Well, according to Monsanto, and a lot of people who are into organic food and GM food, I am too, but they a lot of the people do have a mindset that they don't really need vitamins and minerals, and probably a lot of people don't take vitamins and minerals, so they don't see that Codex Alimentarius is necessarily a threat to them. But they don't understand, or they may, that Codex Alimentarius is actually making regulations for GM food as well, and organic food, and they're actually using the same template on organic food as they have on vitamins and minerals. They're watering down the regulations relative to what is classed as organic and what's not. And the reason they're doing this is it makes it easier for the big agro businesses to come in and put their organic stamp on it. And so basically they're moving regulations towards, in favor and bias towards the agro businesses and the big corporations. So the little guy on his organic farm you know, he's not going to be able to make ends meet, certainly with regards to the competition from these other guys. So same thing is happening, same template, basically.
And so this is the same template, different players, but look, I mean, have you
and a
done...
lot of people will say once again that this isn't something we have to worry about in Australia, but that's not true. Ultimately, when they get it together in Europe, this will be ratified by the World Trade Organization. And whether when we start trading, and as I said, you know, the world's becoming a smaller place. You know, we're trading, we're exporting, and what they'll do is, if we're exporting to different markets, overseas markets, European markets, if we're not exporting the way they want, the way the, you know, a large part of the rest of the world has ratified and legislated, then we'll start getting, you know, trade sanctions slapped on us. The government will, you know, be paying millions of dollars in trade sanctions. Or let's just say you're a vitamin health vitamin company and you export, you have an export market. Now, you're not going to be able to export anymore unless you rekit your manufacturing line to produce vitamins the same standard as Europe. So you probably will, because you want to capture that market. But then you're faced with two standards. You've got the Australian standard, which has got maybe higher dosages, and the European standard, and you've only got one manufacturing line. So what are you going to do? You know, economics says that you're going to only produce one product. So ultimately, at the end of the day, your Australian line starts to come into line with your export line. You know, there are so many different ways this is going to filter through to Australia, but it's a more subtle approach, and it's not going to be the sledgehammer approach.
And also, I mean, from what anything I've heard, genetically modified foods, even though the Codex is designed for our safety, right? Now, there's all of this research that has shown that genetically modified food is not safe. But,
yes.
But is it going to be ruled out or in by Codex?
No, it looks like it's going to be ruled in.
Right.
GM foods, as far as Codex are concerned, GM foods are pretty safe.
Well, I mean, that one fact is enough to scare me a lot. I mean, really, that's terrifying.
They've also, there are many fertilizers and pesticides that they deem safe as well, Hereford. So, it's a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare. And it's coming to visit a picture theatre near us soon.
Yeah. Look, you know, as we, you know, have explored in the show, like just anyone who knows, who's looked into this, we are being attacked on so many levels. It's a multi-pronged attack on the average individual in our society now. And that's why I think, you know, we talk about people who've woken up and we talk about people being asleep. The point is, people, when they wake up, they really wake up because they suddenly realize what's going on, what's coming at them from all these different directions. And the people who aren't awake don't really want to wake up because they're half aware of it, and they're in that state where they just don't want to know, you know, just let me sleep, you know, let me stay in my pleasant dream world here. Because
I think I think you're describing humanity at probably any time in a time period of the world, really. You know, you've got a small minority of people who see things and they affect change, and the rest follow. It's just the way the human being is, the human mechanism is.
That's a very interesting way of looking at it. Yeah, I'm sure it has been throughout the ages, yeah.
And the people who control, you know, the perceptions, the hearts, minds and perceptions of society know this, and they're the ones that have been controlling. You know, originally it was the Roman Catholic Church, the kings and the queens. They control the communication pathways. You know, people were kept illiterate, so when they could read, you know, communication pathways changed into towards newspapers and things like that. So there are always people in control of these communication pathways. So which kept everyone dumb, keeps
right.
everyone asleep in the waking dream. So the great thing, though, and something that's changed in our lifetime is the internet, and a lot more people now can bypass the mainstream forms of communication, and they're becoming educated.
Sorry about that. Yeah, yeah.
they're becoming educated, and we can see that the authorities don't like that, because we're seeing internet, pushes for internet censorship. There's a bill that's just been pushed in the US, put together by Rothschild, Senator Rothschild. Oh, sorry, not Rothschild, Rockefeller, and of the same family. And he made the comment some weeks ago that the worst thing that was ever invented was the internet. So,
right.
I know why he was saying that, because they're feeling threatened, quite threatened by, more people learning and educating themselves. But the critical mass, we still haven't reached that critical mass yet. But, doing what you're doing and doing what I'm doing, this is part of that.
Yeah, and part of what you're doing is this organization, the Alliance for Health Freedom Australia. And let me just read from your website. Alliance for Health Freedom Australia, that's health-freedom.com.au.
Yeah, health-freedom.com.au.
It says, alternate media source dedicated to informing consumers and protecting our rights to health freedom, providing the latest natural health news, exposing the relationships between governments, mainstream media, and the pharmaceutical cartels. That's, a vitally important task. The more we look into these connections, the more we start to see it's the dark face of globalism. It's like the alternative view to the sort of global village. It's the international octopus of globalization, strangling us, sucking our resources and feeding itself. You've got a really interesting set of links here and resources, ebooks, audio files, and news articles. I see you've got the "Don't Inject Me" the swine flu vaccine song there on your front page.
That's a great clip. And our website, where this is for the Australian theatre arena, there's Mike Adams in the US. There's some guys all around the world doing some great jobs. There's the Alliance for Health in the UK, there's the Dr. Rath Foundation, which are doing great things in Europe. Dr. Rath Matthias Rath is really out there campaigning, and he's gone probably one step further. He's uncovering the links between, and this, I know this is, a lot of people may cringe at this, the links between the Nazis and the drug companies, it's all there, it's all in the public domain, it's fact, but
I'm not the least surprised.
Nazis didn't actually run the concentration camps. They were there for security. The people who ran the concentration camps were some of the drug companies. Certainly one of them was IG Farben, the group of, chemical companies, IG Farben. The subsidiaries were Aventis, BASF, and Bayer. These guys ran the concentration camps. There were many of their CEOs who were tried in the Nuremberg trials for rape, torture, murder, and they actually went to prison because of their war crimes. But ironically, they served short terms, only a few years, and they got out and resumed their rightful place on the board of executives of these same drug companies. So that's that sort of ethic that's driving the drug companies and has been for decades. But Matthias Rath is exposing a lot of this. So he's doing some great work. But Mike Adams, as you see on the website, you've seen that Mike Adams rap song, "Don't Inject Me," and it's great.
Well, I'll tell you what, we might just take a little break here and we'll play that song. And then we'll just get right back into the health freedom issues. I've got it up here on the screen. I'll just play it. Here we go. This is "Don't Inject Me" by, what's the name of the group again? Is it
Oh, it's Mike Adams.
Mike Adams.
Yeah, Mike Adams. Yeah, in the okay. US. So he runs the Natural News in the US.
Oh, excellent. Okay, here we go.
Says more than 1 million Americans are already infected. It's safe for children to get vaccinated.
The swine flu's coming back like a viral attack. It's like 7 to 6. You gotta cover your back, but not with the vaccine. Don't give into that, because those medical quacks are making money off that.
They wanna inject you, infect you with the vaccine and say they protect, but they reject your immunity. And if you protest, they arrest you and they lock you down.
Can't have people like that walking around contagious. The truth is outrageous. Don't you know the drug companies made this flu? And if you're thinking you wanna evade this, then you gotta say this.
Don't inject me.
Don't stick that needle in my arm and chemically wreck me.
Don't inject me. Don't infect me.
Don't stick that needle in my veins and medically wreck me.
Don't use me. Don't abuse me.
Don't push your medical lies and try to confuse me.
Don't trick me. Don't you dick me.
With that needle in your hand, don't you dare try to prick me. Don't you know the swine flu is made by man? Pharmaceutical scam. It's all part of the Big Brother population plan. But the thing I don't understand is why they're in Mexico City in an unmarked military van. They don't want you to see the remedies. You can stop influenza with vitamin D for free. Herbal medicine is all that you need. But they can't charge a $50 fee unless
they inject you. They infect you.
They stick a needle in your arm and chemically wreck you.
They use you. They abuse you.
They say they're saving your life while they really confuse you.
What? All you parents, grab your kids and shoot them up just like guinea pigs. Inject your teens and your babies in the crib. And when they get paralyzed, that's when you realize there's no way to undo what you did.
The big drug companies are making the killing, collecting the billions and getting away like a James Bond villain. Cause they're willing to do almost anything just to make money with the flu vaccine.
Sick of the lies, deception, spin, and half-truths? Well, so are we. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Tune in every week at truthnews.com.au or subscribe to the podcast with iTunes or your favourite podcatcher.
Okay, we're back. Wow, that was a great song. Mike, you were saying that that guy singing there is the man behind naturalnews.com. Is that right?
Correct, yes.
Mike
Adams.
Okay, Mike Adams. Now, okay, I've got a couple of questions about this because Natural News is the site that broke the story of Jane Burgermeister and the claims about Baxter. And the claims that that we're all going to be exterminated. Now, I'm just wondering what you think about some of this. I've been following a lot of it, but I've found some of the... I mean, I think that site is an excellent site. However, the particular stories there around Jane Burgermeister, and that there's a site, it's called theflucase.com, that has a lot of links on it, a lot of really interesting stuff. I'm just wondering if it's a little bit alarmist. Do you think maybe that she's gone a little bit over the deep end or something?
Look, it's hard to say. I think with a lot of writers, there's sort of a little bit of poetic license.
Yeah.
But certainly with the Baxter affair, that was absolute fact. Baxter were caught with live viruses in their a bird flu virus.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like that's been confirmed, and that is very disturbing. I mean, it was 72 kilos or something, was it?
And it wouldn't have been picked up unless, I think it was in Czechoslovakia, where one of the lab technicians decided to test it on some ferrets, and they died. And that was just a random sort of test. So if he hadn't have tested there, it would have been unleashed onto the public in Europe.
And look, it's really worth pointing out that when, we're talking about millions and even billions of vaccines, that are going to be produced for the swine flu, and that is the amount of actual material needed would be vast amounts of biological material. So, I mean, a bag of 72 kilos, that sounds like an enormous amount of stuff to be carrying around, but we're talking about organizations here that are talking about making millions upon millions of vaccines. So, I mean, and if there's something dangerous in there, if there's some contaminant that could get into that, the consequences are really, really shocking, and I wouldn't want to minimize that for 1 second. But yeah, where I start to become, and this is where I start to feel that sometimes these people, they lose credibility, and then sometimes that then makes it hard to argue the case. I mean, we've had these issues with 9/11 where some people come in with some more extreme views, and they kind of ruin it for everyone else because they become associated with the movement. And then it turns out that what they're saying is not correct, hasn't been properly researched, and then we all suffer because of that. And
correct. The skeptics actually home in on that, and
they do.
And it becomes a weak chink in your armor. No, I agree there. I mean, it's impossible sometimes to write an article or a good story without making, you know, some errors in judgment. It really is, and sometimes you've got a deadline to make too. So sometimes things aren't researched as well as you thought that you would like to have. But I think in Jane Burgermeister's article in general is fairly well written and fairly well on the money.
Continue.
I was going to say I do. I have to, you know, I look at these things and it's very hard not to think, not to be drawn into the eugenics debate, because there are a lot of people out there believing that, you know, the drugs are out to wipe out half the population of the planet.
There is a view going around, and let me just articulate it for our listeners so that we're all on the same level playing field. Okay, there is a view, and it's quite widespread, in the kind of alternative freedom conspiracy movement, call it, you know, what you will. But there is a lot of people out there, okay? The view is that basically there is a eugenics program, and that this is allied with an extreme environmentalist position, and people point to the Club of Rome, the Agenda 21, the Rio Summit,
Trilateral Commission,
and various statements by very prominent world leaders and very rich men about the need to drastically reduce the world's population. Now, those are all facts, and they can all be proven. Then the claims follow from there that what we're seeing with a variety of things that that big pharma and governments are doing are part of this elaborate plan, which is sort of going under the radar, and, you know, they call it soft kill. We're being slowly killed off with contaminants, vaccines, water fluoridation. Some people say it's the planes spraying us from high altitude. You know, all these different things going on, mercury light bulbs. We've all got the mercury light bulbs now. Lots and lots of different ways
the mercury light bulbs.
The CFL light bulbs apparently have
that's
mercury.
Right. It's a great way of putting it.
So there's a conspiratorial view, which may well be true, that this is all part of a diabolical plan. But I see a bit of a problem here, because we've either got to look at it as incredibly like profit hungry, irresponsible companies basically trying to make a lot of money and overlooking their basic responsibilities in the drive for the profit motive. Or we say, no, they're all doing that deliberately because they want to kill us off. I find it hard for those two. You can't have both, right? Because if they want to keep making money out of us, they don't want to kill us all off, because they've got to keep us alive to keep making money out of us. So I'm a little bit confused as to where to go with that, you know?
I think the right answer is probably somewhere in the middle, as usual.
Yeah.
It's hard to, once again, it's another subject that's very hard to articulate, and it's hard to work out where corporate greed and profit ends and a eugenics agenda begins, and so it's very hard to define. But you know, I mean, the corporations, you know, people who work for corporations, most people are asleep. They you know, you look at the cancer charities, you know, they're full of wonderful, beautiful people all trying to do good things, thinking, believing they're doing good things, but they don't actually understand that there have been many effective treatments for cancer over the many years, last 50 years. And my father's a survivor of one of those. But
okay.
But they don't. People don't see any of that. They don't realize that they're still collecting for cancer. You know, why are they collecting? Why are you collecting for cancer when we've got effective therapies? Why? But the reason they're collecting for cancer is a lot of that money goes to drug companies for more research. It's a circular thing. The drug companies give back to the cancer foundations or these charities, and the charities actually go out and do the footwork and actually the marketing for the drugs, ultimately, not specifically, but generally, they create markets for the drug companies. So the charities create markets. They're an instrument to create markets for the drug companies. But the people working for the charities don't see this. So the people working for the big drug companies don't see. A lot of people working for the drug companies believe they're doing a wonderful job and trying to look for the cure for cancer or the cure for HIV or a whole lot of other things. So I think ultimately most of the problems are actually born from ignorance, not necessarily a deep-seated conspiracy, certainly not on the level of employees and management. However, you may find these strategies are being ratified further up the tree, at a higher level, perceptions can be shaped and the direction of the world can be manipulated. So it's possible.
Right. Okay. And look, you know, I'd be the first to, you know, call the alarm, you know, in the sense of the fear of the danger that we are targeted for extermination. I know it's perplexing because, I mean, if I really did have what I would call solid evidence for that, I guess I'd be dropping everything else and I'd only focus on that, because obviously that would kind of supersede everything else. I just don't think there's enough evidence to suggest that that's really going on, other than that may be an effect, that may be a fallout effect of some of the things that are being done, and that there are some parties who want that to happen. We know that. But a lot of it seems to be diluted. A lot of it seems to be coming, these extreme environmentalists who basically think that human beings are a plague on the planet, that we'd be better off if human beings weren't here. That seems to be almost like a mental illness. And I don't think...
It's recalcitrant thinking.
It's just sick. I mean, I don't know how else to say. It's just very, very sick.
Well, I think a lot of the people who govern this world and shape this world, these are people right up the top. They use these theories probably for the eugenics agenda, because ultimately we don't have to. You know, there is no need for famines right now, so we don't need to work towards lowering the population to avert famines. There's so much food that's been thrown out, like certain crops that are just thrown out and dumped rather than actually feeding the poor, just so they can control their market and keep their market prices buoyant. You know, we could solve the problems of the world tomorrow. There's enough information out there to show that hydrogen is a viable source of energy. Patents have been purchased and obfuscated. So it's out there, and if we could create with technology, we could actually create a better world that would see our way around these things, probably to the point where we could have twice the population that we have now, three times, as long as the technology allows for it. No, there probably won't be a problem. But the thing is, these thinkers and these policymakers are working on the on the concept that we're going to have oil forever, and we're only going to have the technology we have right now forever. And that's recalcitrant thinking. But they're using it as possibly for this other agenda.
Well, there's two ways of one view on this is that if there is an agenda which involves depopulation and eugenics, one possible reason why the banking infrastructure might want this to occur is that they look at the big cycle, you know, and that what they see is now an economy that is the debt has spiraled out of control, and what they would probably like to do, and I can see from a banker's point of view, in a totally cold-hearted kind of way of looking at things, wouldn't it be nice if we could just knock everything down and start again? Like, you know, let's say we kill off 3/4 of the population and then build it all back up again. We can have growth again, you know. And of course, you know, that is kind of what happened in the past. I mean, we had World War II was a massive war. You know, we had an economic depression. We had stagnation in Europe and America. Then we had a massive war that killed hundreds of millions of people and destroyed infrastructure, destroyed, you know, half of Europe, you know, huge parts of the world. And then it could all be rebuilt, and the economy grew. There was a massive growth in the economy for like 50 years. And I can quite see why it would suit some of these evil-minded, you know, just cold-hearted people to think that, well, wouldn't it be great if we could just do that again? And from that point of view, you know, I don't know. It's a frightening concept.
I'd like to go on and talk about this sort of this topic, and it's probably outside the scope of what we want to talk about tonight. But it's a fascinating world. I was just, I might just sum it up with a recent article I read in Inside Science, which is a news service. A group of analysts or group of physicists analyzed the financial markets of 48 countries. Just recently, they concluded that the financial or the economics of the Western world comes down to being controlled by a handful of people or families on the planet.
That so is fascinating.
That's something, you know, that's something probably a lot of us already knew or had a gut feeling about, but it's articulated and scientifically validated now by a group of physicists. And they're saying that this group of people could quite easily manipulate the world economy, and it's quite possible that's what we're seeing right now, the world economy being manipulated for nefarious reasons.
Look, send us that link. That's I'll definitely put that on the show notes. Thanks for that. That's excellent. So why don't we just get into your petition, because I really want to make people aware of the petition. Now, I'll just get the page up here again.
We've heard the rap song, Don't Inject Me, from Mike Adams, so it's probably fairly topical now. We've got, so if you go to the Alliance for Health Freedom Australia, you'll find we have some petitions. We're still building the site or updating it. We've still got a lot of data to transfer from our old site, but the petitions at the moment, we have some fluoride petitions. We're petitioning state governments around Australia, every single state, to remove the fluoride from our drinking water. There's so much overwhelming evidence now to show that it's dangerous. That it causes all sorts of disease, from dental fluorosis to cancer.
But again, governments are going in the opposite direction. They're introducing fluoride in places
at a blinding speed.
They're going the opposite direction, even of other countries, even of most of like Europe. I don't think are there any countries in Europe that still fluoridate their water?
Not that I know of. No, there may be a couple.
Right.
But,
I mean, I know that.
But mostly they're fluoride free.
It's odd, isn't it? I mean, Scandinavia. Now, you'd think if Scandinavia is generally respected as being pretty advanced in most fields, why don't they fluoridate their water? Surely they would if it was universally known that this was terrific. I often bring that up when I'm discussing this with those, you know, many people who just assume that fluoride is a good, you know, a given, a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an interesting a report that came out that showed that Tasmania, after, was it 40 years, has not improved its dental care at all through fluoridation.
It's that same experience is being found in nearly every single study. There's very little valid evidence to support fluoridation, and if there is, it's marginal. But ultimately, you know, we could argue the merits of, you know, it, you know, its toxicity. Certainly, it was only ever intended to be topical. If there is merit, it's been shown that it's only when the fluoride is in the mouth, not ingested. Now, a lot of people we bandy around the word fluoride. Now, a lot of people don't realise that there's actually there's the industrial grade fluoride, which is the salicylic acids, and or hexosalicylic fluoridic acid, and or there's the calcium, the natural form, which is calcium fluoride, and it's found in nature, and when you ingest it, it will be passed straight through your body, whereas these other forms of fluoride are residual. They're not passed out of your body. They build up in the cells over many, many years, and they've been shown to cause disease. And these it's an interesting story, because originally when these this fluoride was introduced, it was introduced under the instigation of the melon group of industries, who actually owned large aluminium smelters in the USA, and they had this problem with this toxic waste fluoride, because this particular fluoride from the aluminium industries, which is hydrofluorosilic acid and sodium silofluoride, this stuff is toxic, and they didn't know what to do with it. They had to pay a lot of money to get rid of it, and so they managed to use their propaganda and their communication channels to massage public consciousness into accepting fluoride in their drinking water. And human beings being what they are, they're easily manipulated if you control the right communication paths.
Yes.
And that's what we have today. This is essentially the melon group of industries, the aluminium industry, getting rid of their industrial waste, toxic waste, in the water supply, and actually charging us for it.
Now, that's we may do a whole show on fluoride at some point, because I really want to cover that. You know,
it's worth it, isn't it?
In some depth. But I mean, with this toxic waste, I mean, surely it can't really be. They can't really be just dumping all their toxic waste. I mean, or is that just how it began? I mean, that it's not just an ongoing toxic waste dump.
No,
thing,
that,
is
that's
it?
How.
I mean,
that's how. Yeah, Hereford. Yeah. That's how it began.
Yeah, yeah, and it's become institutionalized now.
Correct.
Yeah, it's a lot of these things are just hard to really believe. But you know, you get into it and you study it and you realize, well, there's just no. Look, I'm going to get my dentist hopefully on this show one day, because she's actually a holistic dentist, and she told me she doesn't believe in fluoride at all. And I was really amazed, because I always said, oh, all dentists agree. Well, they don't.
No.
So just like not all doctors vaccinate, you know.
Yes.
It's interesting, isn't it? But, you know, the average person is so unaware. They're so bombarded by pure propaganda that they just assume
You put your finger on it there, Herford, because there was a survey done many years ago, and most doctors wouldn't take chemotherapy, radiation, or radiation if they had cancer. And it's what you're seeing there. The reality is contrary to the propaganda, but the public believe the propaganda and not the reality, because obviously the reality doesn't filter back to them.
Yeah.
So you can see how the whole of the population of a country or a society can be controlled by a few communication pathways.
Very true.
That's why generally when you invade another country and you're an army, one of the first things you do is you head straight towards the TV station, the radio station, so you can take over the propaganda machine.
You have to gain control.
It's a valuable asset. Yes.
Yeah. So true.
What I was going to say, though, Hereford, just summing up the fluoride, even for all those other reasons, you know, they could be arguable, you could spend hours arguing, but ultimately we did not consent to be medicated by our water supply. Now, someone who drinks more water than the other person is going to have more of this toxic fluoride in their bodies, which, and it's a medicine. We're being medicated through our water, and that's not on. You know, we have consent. I do not consent to that, and many of the Australian public did not consent to that. Yet it's still being foisted upon us as a medicine. We're being medicated. It's not just a little thing like, you know, and a little additive to the water that's harmless. We're being medicated.
I mean,
being medicated without my consent.
Some people would say it's like iodizing salt, you know, that salt is sold with iodine in it.
Well, personally, I don't like being iodized. I don't like having my salt iodized either, because I like to eat salt that's sea salt, that's unadulterated sea salt. It has iodine in it.
Yeah.
See, so once again, you don't need to have all of these things.
Well, this is something, okay. One thing I want to do for when we do our show dedicated to fluoride, I want to find out, because I've never been able to find out this, does fluoride occur naturally in say, spring water, or any, you know, any types of naturally occurring water that human beings would have, you know, historically been drinking, you know, as an animal, you know? So is there a case to say, well, fluoride is just a, you know, quote, normal, mineral that is found in water? Because I mean, if you buy mineral water, well, it doesn't have fluoride in it, as far as I know.
No.
They're talking about adding it to bottled water. I've heard that. But I mean, does fluoride occur in say spring water ever? I mean,
No. It depends where the water comes from, of course.
If there are organic
sources of fluoride, then you may have trace elements of it, but generally no. And once again, you know, if the organic, you know, calcium fluoride was there, then it wouldn't hurt you at all.
And you wouldn't need to add it then, would you? I mean,
well, you wouldn't need to add it. Look, there's no need to add it full stop for the health of your teeth. There've been studies of different cultures around the world, the long-lived cultures, the Okinawans for one, they don't have fluoride in their water, and they drink they live way over 100. I think generally, you know, certainly 100 is the general age, and many of them live to 110, 120 years of age, and they don't have fluoridate their water, and their teeth are great.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, once again, if you start looking at these other cultures and the studies of these other cultures that enjoyed good health and a very long lifespan, you'll start to see the propaganda that's been generated from our own corporations.
It's extraordinary.
And you'll actually realize that it's most of the things we actually believe aren't true.
Indeed, as we've been discovering. Look, to our chagrin. You've got some petitions. So we've got the remove the fluoride from our drinking water petition.
Correct.
And this is all coming from a site called www.healthpetitions.com.au. Is that your site as well?
Yes, that's okay. Also an extension of the things we're doing, our campaign.
Yeah, so I'm just looking here. We've got do not introduce mandatory swine flu vaccination. Now, of course, mandatory vaccination is already in place for health workers. How do we deal with that? You know, if you're a nurse or if you work in a hospital, you're required to get the vaccine, as far as
I
know.
It's a quagmire, actually, because you can still be a conscientious objector. You still have the right to refuse and the right not to consent. But unfortunately, the management structures and all the other people who have been brainwashed by the propaganda, they start to join forces and close ranks against you. And you get this, it's human nature, and you'll be possibly laid off, or you'll be suspended, or there'll be restrictions placed on your employment. And they're doing these things because they think that's the best thing to do. They think they're doing it for the best, of the betterment of the world. But they don't understand that their thinking is ignorant.
Yes.
And at worst, dangerous.
So we need to really get this out. The general awareness of this needs to increase. I mean, we've got doctors saying they don't want to get the jab. We've got insurers saying that they will not cover doctors who give the jab. I mentioned that earlier on the show, that there was this scandal where the insurers last week were saying they're not going to cover it. They're expecting a flood of claims. and yet the government said, well, we're just going to go ahead and do it anyway. That suggests to me that the government is under some sort of pressure due to their contracts that they have with CSL, etc. And obviously, they've got to make it look good. They can't, they're locked into this now. They've got to do this.
I don't know whether I go so far as to say they're even under contract, Herford. It's a funny. This world works in a very funny way. What you do first is you create the propaganda, and then everything else follows.
Okay.
Everyone else follows suit. You've got politicians. There might be a lot of politicians actually don't believe in vaccination, but they're faced with this decision to make. Do they not make the decision, and then all of a sudden there is a pandemic, or do they err on the side of caution? And most of them are ruled by popular opinion. They want to be seen to be doing the right thing. So they actually make most of their decisions on the basis of their being trying to be seen to be doing the right thing, not whether they're actually doing the right thing.
Right.
And once again, the decisions are made on economics. They don't want to be sued. Let's just say there is a pandemic and they didn't do the right, or they didn't, vaccinate. So they're worried about being sued in that direction. And to some degree, if you look at it on a scale of economics, being sued by the whole country is a lot worse than only being sued by a few people who are killed or maimed from the vaccines. So that's the way politicians think. They think in numbers and economics. They don't think on personal levels. They don't think about whether their child is going to be maimed, or what they would think if someone they loved is maimed. That's not the way they think. They make decisions on by popular decree. And that's what we're seeing, and it becomes a hysteria. So what's happening here is the drug companies have created this scare, this propaganda, and between the drug companies and the World Health Organization, the propaganda is being filtered out, and governments, whether they like it or not, are being forced to act towards bringing out vaccines or possibly mandatory vaccinations, and everyone else will jump on the bandwagon because everyone else has been brainwashed, and so everyone's going to jump on that bandwagon, and so anyone who doesn't vaccinate is going to be seen as some sort of pariah, some nutbag, anything is further from the truth. Those people are quite informed and they know the dangers of vaccination.
Well, that's where this has such in common with the problem reaction solution paradigm that we see with terrorism, for example. It's a fear is created in people's mind, whether it's a real thing or not, doesn't really matter. It's a fear is created. Then the public, reacts, and that's the hysteria that, oh, we're all going to die, or we're all going to be killed by terrorists, or we're all going to die. And then the government comes in with the solution, And then because there's been this build-up, everyone accepts the solution. And quite often what the solution is something that's quite egregious, That's an old trick.
It's been used forever throughout history.
Yeah, and it seems to be, you know, Mussolini said that that fascism was the perfect meshing of government and corporations. It's really corporatism, and you know that corporatism is really what's going on here, because you've got government and corporations in partnership, deep in bed with each other, to ensure that we get totally raped. And that's, you know.
That's right. And they control the hearts and minds of people through the propaganda and the mainstream media.
Yeah.
Everyone is sort of, everyone's consciousness is held in this sort of state of suspension.
Yeah.
And what's even more ironic and quite humorous is most people actually think that their thoughts are genuine and original.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, everyone's thoughts comes from what they've been exposed to. You know, if you listen to Current Affair, that's where your thoughts are going to come from, you know.
Yes,
listen to correct. Truth News, then you're going to get thoughts that are different. You know, Truth News Radio Australia. If you listen to there, you're going to have other spontaneous thoughts.
The trick is to actually have a broad range of information sources.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, like I always say, you know, don't follow anything. Don't just listen to what we're saying. Just take it on board, and do your own research, and then you know, you continue to grow and develop that way. Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
Look, we're just about getting ready to wrap it up here. It's been a really great chat.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah, and hope to actually get you on the show again, and you know, hope you can keep us updated with anything you're doing. And posting links.
No, I'll do that, Hereford. We'll work really closely together in future.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Some of these campaigns.
And you've, of course, been coming to some of the films, or you came to the last film that we did?
Just the last film,
yes. Yeah. So there'll be more of those. And we didn't get around to talking on September 11 tonight, but I may get you on again because you have experience with explosive demolition, and I'd love to talk to you about that sometime.
Yeah, sure. Well, I was an ex-Navy diver. So,
yeah. We
know a bit about that.
We may well do that. On that note, we're going to call it a show for tonight. Thanks, Mike. It was really superb.
All right, Hereford, pleasure.
Yeah.
We'll talk again, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. And good night, Australia, and good night, world.